Good evening, one and all. Yes, halfway through the week again on a Wednesday, 20th. Can you believe it? Where's March gone? It's disappeared very quickly, or it seems to have done. Anyway, I am here, and so is my guest. Now, there are two things that you learn when you come to America, and that is at least a third of the population reckon they were at Woodstock. And over half the population reckon their ancestors came across on the Mayflower. None of the other boats, just the Mayflower. But that's something that a lot of people are interested in. After all, March the 9th, I think it was recognized as Genealogy Day, and a lot of people are getting into it these days. I mean, you've got all the you're finding your roots, history detectives, all that sort of stuff, where people go back, look for their family, look for their lineage. Now, I myself, I had a cousin that took so far back, but obviously my roots are pretty much in England, and that's it. In fact, down to Cornwall, where a lot of the family came up from originally, and I've got my family back to 1400. I managed to pick up a couple of ones the other day, and it just shows you there are sites now where you can put in somebody's name and that, and you'll find that somebody's already investigated and looked on that family tree and added bits to it. There's a gap, I think, of about two generations that from linking everybody of the family, which there's sort of four or five main branches, to all be together. And you have lots of myths and things like that. Where we part of the Armada that got sunk, and the rescued down in Cornwall, and decided to stay on there, and all sorts of things like that. But as I say, you get that, and people are really into that whole thing of finding out about their family. But what about if suddenly you find out through an accident that what you thought perhaps was your family and what you believed certain parts of your family were just weren't true? That it is something totally different, that you might even be in totally different religion, let alone anything else. Well, my guest today, this happened to her. There was a fire in 2011. Well, I'll tell you what, let's find out more about her. Let's introduce her. On the show today, I have the one and only Linda Ambrose Bronniman. I hope that's right, Linda, or close enough to it.
Very close.
Welcome to the
Very close.
show. Yeah,
Well,
that German? Is it? Is it I
no, Brenneman, it's Swiss, actually.
Close, close. I mean,
Close,
yeah,
yeah, very
you get
close.
across one to the other.
Well,
Anyway.
they used to have the umlauts on the O,
Yes,
and then
I
they
was good. I was
switched
going to say,
it.
is something missing? Yeah, yeah.
So they switched it to OE, and but then it just gets
Then I might have got it with the
Brenneman.
umlaut. But as I was saying, introduction there, all this book of yours, wonderful book, which I thought originally might was fiction, but it's not. It's true. It's non-fiction. It's true. It
True.
started from a house fire in what, 2011?
Yes. So, Barry, first of all, thank you for having me on the show. It is just lovely to have a chat with you.
There you go.
And I have to tell you, I am so impressed that you were able to trace your family back to the 1400s. I didn't get that far. I got to the
Well, my cousin did it,
1700s.
but my cousin did it back to about 16 somethings when I was younger. And I've managed to, I mean, it's not a common name either. There are spots around the country, there's the sort of Yorkshire Evers and the Cornish Evers and the Enfield Barnet Evers, and there are a couple of other countries, where there are sort of subfamilies of that, like everything. But I have, with working with, following up with bits of friends and people I never met before, and they're very distant relations who are now friends, sort of thing. We have traced it back, and in fact, we all hope there's something famous along the way, and we are. I am one generation away from, well, I know how the link is, but I can't sort of write it all down because I'm missing a couple of bits, from the person who built the Lizard Lighthouse in Cornwall, and Helston Church in Helston. That's about my fame.
That's fun, though.
I know.
I should find that out.
I mean, there's some parts of the family that have gone into it a lot more than me. You know, I've just sort of pulled bits together. But, I mean, we always knew we were from Cornwall. Two brothers came up because originally, I think 1700s, it used to be spelt with an H at the end, E-V-A-H. And I've traced it back to even before that. And this is before 1470. There was a Simon with an S-Y-M-O-N, and it was Y-V-A. Now, that the whole business of, well, we were Spanish or Portuguese, perhaps from the Armada, that could explain that difference in spelling. You know, somebody who washed up, lives here, then they can't say his name or something like that. And especially down in Cornwall, the accent, you know, Wyver, Wyver and E sort of thing, you know. So anyway, that's the way it goes. Anyway.
That's great.
I got to ask you a question at the end that I found, but I'll ask you that at the end.
Okay.
This was a fire that happened in 2011. And what was found after this fire?
Yes. So my parents' house almost burned down. And my sister, who lived in the same city, they were from Buffalo, New York. And she was trying to pull things out of the house because, you know, at that point, the firemen were spraying everything with water. Mm. So she just pulled a lot of things out, and she didn't even realize that she pulled out a box. And it was another 5 years after the fire that I had decided I was going to look into my family history. Mm-hmm. And as you said, way back when I was in my late 20s, I had learned by accident that my father, who we grew up Catholic and always thought we were Catholic, that he was actually Jewish.
Wow.
But I hadn't really done anything with that. And then
would that be going back to the war? Would that be changing because, you know, of being scared to show their Judaism or something like that?
Yeah, you know, they came after, well, a lot of the book talks about, you know, what the cataclysmic events that they suffered because of their Judaism. But and so I think when he came here, you know, he married my mother, who was Catholic. And when he came, I think it was easier to just be Catholic. The country was still quite anti-Semitic when they came.
Yeah.
And then I don't think he probably wanted to protect his family. He didn't want us to ever experience what he experienced.
Wow.
So
anyway, carry on. Anyway,
that's okay. So about the box, my sister, it had gotten stuck in my sister's closet, and I started investigating my family's roots, and she sort of miraculously at the same time was cleaning out the closet and realized she had this box. And in it, there were all kinds of letters and documents and pictures, beautiful, wonderful family pictures, a lot of which I put in the book, mm-hmm. Because really I just, it made them come alive. So she sent it to me, and, you know, the documents and the letters were all in Hungarian, and I didn't speak Hungarian or couldn't read it. Mm-hmm. So I was looking for people to help me investigate. And through a friend of a friend, found an incredible person in Hungary, András Gazicki, who helped me really search for my family roots. And he was remarkable. And as I said, we found the family tree back to the 1700s.
Wow, that's great. Because, I mean, obviously the Jewish people are known to be, well, they're called wanderers, weren't they? Because they moved around a lot. And so to actually be able to trace it back that far is something.
Yes, well, they were forced to, you know, they weren't allowed there, you know, back in the 1700s, they weren't allowed to have too many Jews in any one place. And they were also, if they started to make any kind of money, they were taxed so heavily that it became, you know, almost impossible to live. And they were only allowed certain means of making money. They weren't allowed to be, you know, professionals or in government or any of the
heavily regulated. That's right, indeed. I mean, it goes back to medieval times. You know, there were doctors and money lenders, and that was it. You know, you couldn't do this, you couldn't do that. Yeah, I mean, it does go back a long way. I know along the way, though, wasn't it? I can't think whose it was. Clara.
My mother.
Yeah.
My mother, Clara.
She found out that she did a lot of work rescuing people during the Holocaust, didn't she? Or hid them or something.
Yes, yes. So that's another story that is really quite remarkable. And she's actually going to be honored on May 5th with a mural in Buffalo. But what happened was, and we didn't know any of this, in 2006, all of a sudden we got, when I say we, I'm one of seven children. And we all got invitations to the Israeli consulate in New York City, inviting us for a ceremony to honor my mother, who was being honored as righteous among the nations. And that is Israel's highest award for Gentiles who saved Jews during the Holocaust.
Yeah, it's amazing how this stuff still comes out. There was, what's the person's name? It was the English Schindler, Nicholas Winton.
So, exactly. Yeah. There's just a movie that came out.
Yeah.
I think it just came out a few weeks ago.
Yeah, I think it did, because I remember seeing him on Esther Ranson's program, because that's where it was. And I remember him sitting in the audience and her telling That's Life or something it was called, and her telling his story, and then all around him sitting there, which he didn't realize, were people that he'd rescued. You know, it's amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, he and Oskar Schindler are probably the most famous, but, you know, believe it or not, there's only 21,000 people in the whole world who have this honor, because the majority of the people didn't step up. They wouldn't risk their lives for others.
Exactly.
So,
I remember going back when I was at school, we had a French teacher was replaced by another teacher. Our French teacher was replaced for a year by another teacher. And she taught us French, but she was part Dutch. And I remember after the exams and stuff like that, you know, we had another month of term or something like that. She started teaching us a bit of Dutch, and she told us about her life. And she was very high up in the Dutch resistance. And, you know, unbelievable what you find out, sort of thing.
Yeah, it is. It is.
So you're going you're going back through the family, and you're finding more and more and more about the family. And I guess, you know, something you wanted to do, and I know you sort of bit of an entrepreneur sort of type thing, and what was your aim, just to go back as far as you could?
Well, you know, my aim in the beginning was really, I really wanted to understand my great grandmother Margit, who just sounded like the most remarkable person. And she was born in 1876, during sort of the golden era of Budapest, when Budapest was exploding, becoming a huge cosmopolitan city, and
beautiful,
you know, all sorts. Yeah. And she grew up in privilege, because her father, my great great grandfather, was actually, he had been orphaned in the cholera epidemic and grew up very poor, but educated himself and became a very prominent lawyer. He was founder of the Budapest Bar, one of the founders of the Budapest Bar, and became enormously successful. And so she grew up in privilege. And yet, even though she had grown up in privilege during World War I, she became a nurse and took care of people. She was an incredible philanthropist and had just survived so many ups and downs. And my mother had told me a couple of stories about her that she would sort of hold court one day a week. And this was right before the war when, there were so many restrictions on Jews, and Jews weren't allowed to, they're only 6% of the population was allowed to be doctors or lawyers and own factories. So it put hundreds of thousands of people out of work. But she would hold open her home and people could go and ask her if they needed anything, needed money, needed food, she would give them. She would, if they needed medical help, she would send them to her friends who were doctors and then pay for the medical bills. And she would try to find them jobs. And she's just a remarkable woman. So I'd heard these stories and I just wanted to know more about her. And then when Andras, with these papers, when Andras started looking into things, we actually found several, I mean, he just had remarkable sources, but newspaper articles and books written about my family members and books written by my family members. And there were two books that were key, and one was written by a great great uncle who died in 1920, and he had researched the family back to the 1700s. And so so his book was a great source of information and really led us to just more and more discoveries. So that was one of the key books. And then another book was written by my father's cousin, who was 10 years old when the Germans marched into Hungary. And he was actually autistic. And but so he had an incredible memory, and he wrote a book about his experiences from during the war. And so I learned a lot about what actually happened, how the family hid, and so on. So it was those two piece sources of information were just so helpful
I bet.
to
Now,
me. And
the name of the book is The Politzer Saga, which gives a little inkling into something you found out along the way.
yes, I didn't even know my family names. So I didn't know that we were Pulitzers, and I didn't know the name Pulitzer or Misner or any of a lot of the names that are in the book. I had no idea.
Right, because I mean, was it Adam Pulitzer? Is that the one that was linked to you?
Yes, Adam Pulitzer was a very famous doctor, and he. To this day, people consider him the father of otology. So, if you talk to most ear, nose, and throat surgeons, they all recognize the name Adam Pulitzer.
Wow. He wasn't the one that did the award, was he? Was that him, or was that another Pulitzer? The Pulitzer Prize.
Oh, the Pulitzer Prize. No, that's a
No.
different Pulitzer.
Different.
It's a different Pulitzer Prize, but it seems like, and Andras was never able to confirm this. But we were definitely from the same town of Politz. That's how Jews largely were assigned their names, and often they were assigned names based on what town they were from.
Okay, makes sense, yeah.
So we were from the same town. But then also, Andras found a couple of letters between Adam Politzer and Joseph Politzer's brother, and they called each other cousins. So I don't know if we were actually related or not. But then Sigmund Pulitzer, who I had just mentioned, who had written the book Our Family History, Sigmund was married to Irma Pulitzer, and Irma Pulitzer was Joseph Pulitzer's cousin, first
Okay.
cousin.
Yeah, it's interesting because that's what I was going to say to you. What I found going back is there's a lot of my family marrying a lot of the same family, if you know what I mean. You know, it's like, I guess in a small town, you know, but there's like four or five that were married to, such and such a family.
Yeah, distant cousins and so on.
So that's it. What else did you find? musicians, lawyers, artists, all sorts of stuff.
Oh, yeah. All sorts, yes. Well, Isaac, who was the one that went back to 1700s, was an incredible violinist, which got him in trouble, but that's, a whole story in and of itself. There were several writers, there were several artists. Adam Pulitzer, the doctor, could have been an incredible artist. He was a very talented. And he used his talent to create pictures of the ear and ear diseases, and that's how
Okay,
he
yeah.
got to be such a good teacher. But then also he was a big art collector, and I had several other uncles, great uncles, and so on, who were unbelievable art collectors. So yes, yeah,
Apart from the sort
yeah.
of secret, a couple of the secrets we've mentioned, did you find any other sort of deep, dark secrets that nobody knew about?
Well, nobody knew about any of these people. I don't think there were any any bad things. We
Right.
didn't find, there were no murders or anything like that. But I think what was remarkable is, how these people survived these cataclysmic events.
Yeah,
So
yeah.
one of the things that was interesting, Adam's older brother. Now, Adam was one of 14 children, 14 Pulitzers, and Adam's older brother had been in medical school in Vienna at the time when the 1848 Hungarian Revolution broke out, and it was called the spring, the Revolution of Spring or something like that. I'm not getting the name quite right. But it happened throughout Europe, and people were just rising up against the very strict monarchies, and it turned out that Illich then became a doctor in the war, and of course Hungary lost. So this was a war for Hungary's independence, and from Austria. And the Austrians brought in the Russians to help them, and the Russians just killed everybody. I mean, they just slaughtered everybody. So, and it was very, they had very brutal reprisals. So Illich could have been, he was very close to being executed. And one of the townspeople, the town clerk, lied. So, and said that he wasn't involved with the war. Otherwise, he probably would have been
Yeah,
executed. So,
indeed. You've
yeah.
done all this with your book, The Pulitzer Saga. Are you still working on stuff? You said, oh, that's another story in itself, and about are you thinking, well, there's a few more bits and pieces I could delve into here. Are you still working on stuff like that?
What, Andras had become such an incredible sort of collaborator and trusted friend, and he was an amazing person. And in 2021, he died. He had been fighting colon cancer, and I think it was a huge personal blow. And so I haven't really, I've done a little bit, but not that much. But what has happened, what is wonderful, is now that the book is out, I've had several people write to me and say, we may be related. And there have been three or four of those at least. And so we're sort of exploring
Yeah,
where are
it's
those
like I said,
connections.
you get information from family perhaps you've never met, and it fills in the gaps, and it sounds that. Now, one of the things that I wonder is if you have this, within your book, The Pulitzer Saga, honoring the memories of family and stuff like that, does that help you find your roots or perhaps anchor yourself into your place in the world these days?
Very much so. Very much so. I think what happens is when you don't know, and when there's secrets, you feel a bit wobbly, and you don't know why there's secrets. their secrets, right? But you think there's something wrong with you that you're not, they're not telling you these things. And so I think by learning about my roots, it just has given me sort of a freedom and a self-confidence. And I'm really so honored and proud of these people who have just lived through unbelievable hardships and have been generous and compassionate and care about serving humanity. That's, I think, the thing that's come across almost all of the relatives that I found is how they all wanted to serve humanity and make the world a better place.
Well,
so they're very inspirational.
I think that's great. And I'm sure your books will help make the world a better place for quite a few people. Just to read about the experiences and everything like that. But time is now getting away from us. So what I'm going to do is hand the show over to you so you can tell everybody where they can find more about you and, of course, your book.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Well, I have a website, and the website is www.pulitzersaga.com. And the book is available on Amazon and on Barnes & Noble. And if you live in Buffalo, the bookstore called Talking Leaves.
Mm-hmm.
And you can always get in touch with me on the website, or I'm also on Facebook.
Okay, so you don't have to shuffle off to Buffalo. You can get it online as well.
Yes.
Okay. Well, Linda, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure listening to you and learning about your family and the things that you learned. And as I say, at the start, it's something, I'm glad I've done it. I'm glad I've done what I did, but, and I knew I had a good inkling, but I wasn't at Woodstock. And my family never came across. I was at the Isle of Wight, which was the English version of Woodstock, but that's a different story. Anyway, thank you so much, and good luck with the book.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Joy talking with you.
My guest today there. How about that, eh? Good stuff. I better spell her name. Linda Ambrose Bruniman. I'll forget that wrong. Linda Ambrose, A-M-B-R-U-S. And then the last name is B-R-O-E-N-N-I-M-A-N. But if you look up the Pulitzer Saga, or pulitzersaga.com, you'll find all about her and about the book and everything like that there. Great stuff. Well, that's it for this week. Sunday, I'll be back with the two musical shows between 5 and 6. Those were the days where the theme last week was, I think we're on green, we're on colours, aren't we? So songs with or artists with green in it. This week, it's blue. Blues. I think we might get 3 weeks out of that. There's a lot of songs with blue in it. And then, of course, after that, between 6 and 7 p.m. Eastern, we have the Swinging 60s, the music from the 60s. Well, that's it. I'll be back next Tuesday and Wednesday with fresh guests. But until then, as always, we have one thing left to say. Don't forget...